Okay, let us start the next topic. That is the, about IS-16. So,
okay, thank you. We now move on to agenda paper 2 on the proposed narrow scope amendments to ES-16, published in June 2017. These amendments relate to the accounting for proceeds from selling items produced by an item of property, plant and equipment before this asset is available for use. As shown on page 2 of the agenda paper, these amendments originated from a submission to the IFRS Interpretation Committee. To address the question, the board decided to amend ES-16. The proposed amendments, together with the other approach considered by the board, are detailed on page 3 and 4, respectively, of the agenda paper. We have three main questions for you today. Firstly, on slide 5, we would like to know whether the proceeds from testing activities are usually material and which industries could mainly be affected by the amendments. Secondly, on slide 6, we would like to obtain your views on the allocation of cost. The exposure draft would require an entity to recognize in P&L the cost related to inventory sold before an asset is ready for use. So, based on your experience, we ask you whether identifying this cost would require significant judgment and whether you think the amendment would affect the way entities allocate costs. Finally, on slide 7, we seek your views on testing activities. The exposure draft proposed to define testing activities. We ask you whether the proposed definition of testing activities would be helpful in assessing when an asset is capable of operating as intended by management. We would appreciate your comments and input on these three areas.
Do you have any question or comment?
First of all, I would say that in our experience, it is not material. But I also recognize that there could be some businesses, some line of business where it could be material. Secondly, I quite agree that absence of definition of what is testing period was creating some issues, in the sense that some companies were considering testing as the limited number of items which are being tested and coming out from the factory. But some other company, under the guise of testing, was extending that period to an indefinite period of time till such time they perceive that they have now reached a state of completion of the project. So therefore, this definition definitely will be very, very helpful. So I'm always in support of that. This will take care of a lot of anomaly. And secondly, now that in any case this is going to be an item of P&L, in any case, at whatever point in time you extend the testing period to be, in any case it is coming in the P&L, so therefore it is going to help. However, I have only one point to make here, is that it has been clarified that depreciation is not going to be charged off in the P&L during the testing period. So therefore, when we say that what will go in the P&L will be the revenue and the corresponding cost, the cost of sales. Now the cost of sales, as we all know, in addition to the direct cost, namely raw material and others, it also involves allocated costs. And allocated cost also includes depreciation. Now we know that the depreciation is not to be taken, but the allocated cost in any case will have to be taken. Now, during the testing period, everything is in a state of imbalance. Standard costing system might not have been developed at that time. So therefore, standard cost also cannot be applied. Therefore, this period will require a lot of judgment. Now, during this period, when other cost allocation will be dependent on the judgment of the management. Now, why depreciation is left out, it could be a question. And secondly, if you are talking in the context of IAS 16, we are saying that, well, this will go in the P&L. But if you take a position that what will go as cost of sales is a subject matter of IAS 2, therefore I will deal with it in IAS 2. So therefore, I mean, that has to be acknowledged that it has to be dealt with in IAS 2. But I don't find anything of that. The point I'm trying to make is that the IAS 16 is very good, the amendment is very good. But then the gap has to be bridged. And how that gap is to be bridged is something I would like to focus on.
Okay. On your first point, okay, why DNA? DNA is not included in the cost of goods. So this is because the asset is not still ready for use, and we need to be consistent with that premise that you start depreciating an asset when it is ready for use. And we know that in some industries, the depreciation and amortization expense can account for significant amounts, and that the cost of goods sold of such items could be somewhat different from the cost of goods sold of assets that would be produced subsequently when the asset is ready for use. But in that case, we are aware of the fact that there would be different profitability levels. On the second point that you made, I think we are aware that this cost allocation issue might create some challenge, especially in some industries. And from the very beginning, the board decided to provide in the basis for conclusions some guidance to help in that allocation issue. We don't say that this guidance will not address the whole issue, but at least it could be a good starting point to make that allocation. And if you read carefully the basis for the basis for conclusion, we suggest that an entity could start by identifying the cost that will be allocated to the inventory that would be sold, since IAS 2 includes some very detailed guidance on the cost that should be included in the cost inventory. Then you would deduct all the abnormal costs that cannot be capitalized either under IAS 16 or either under IAS 2, and by deduction you would get the cost of the PP&E. And so it could be a way that would make sense to help in the allocation process. This is what we try to mention in the basis for conclusion as a useful starting point. But we agree that in some cases the allocation will require judgment. We are not creating new judgment, because actually this is an area where judgment has already been prevalent. Especially when you have in the mining industry, when you have a stripping, when you have to allocate stripping cost, or when you have byproducts that you are producing in your production process, you get several products at the same time. You need to make an allocation of cost. So we are not creating something new. We are just adding more judgment. This is something we know that some industries will have to deal with, but
we will be considering the feedback that we get in comment letters, and just from a preview of some of the comment letters we got back, this is one area of concern, so we will be discussing this further and seeing whether we need to do anything more, or is what we currently have in the other standard sufficient, or do we need to somewhat, like you say, bridge the gap? So that is something we will be considering.
But I agree on one point of yours, that you are not adding any new complexity. I mean, the complexity we already had in IAS 2, and you are talking in the context of 16, so therefore you are only clarifying two things. One is that it will go in the P&L, and the depreciation will not go. So therefore, from IAS 16 point of view, I fully agree. But I think somewhere the gap has to be addressed.
So, Barindra, can I ask a question? So you said you cannot use standardized cost for those types of revenue, because standardized cost includes depreciation.
So no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the development of standard cost, it takes time. In the initial stage, when we are going through a stage of testing, more often than not, the company would not be able to develop the standard costing. So they will have to do something other than that. That's what I said.
That could add.
But standard costing will include depreciation in the normal course.
Sandra, please.
I guess when I looked at the standard, I really questioned whether or not this would be a material issue and if it should be something that the IASB should take on. I would suspect that the testing period itself should be relatively short, and is the application of the testing period being appropriately applied and interpreted by companies. I'm not necessarily opposed to the revenue going to the income statement, but I do think that it provides some challenges from a user perspective, because you're going to have a margin that's not reflective of all the costs, so you're going to have an impact on your income statement that the users may not understand, and without additional discussions depending on materiality. And if it's not material, why are we doing it, right? Perhaps it really just goes to, should there be more clarification about the testing period? And then to build on what Brenda said, that there were comments about that the costing is consistent with judgments that are already being made. I agree that that on a good run basis that's true, but if you have a new product and you're determining the costing, you would have had systems and a lot more information to be able to develop those costs. And if you're in a testing phase for a new product, it may not be as easy as it appears to be assumed in the write-up. In addition, if you look at the transition requirements, starting with my view that I don't think it's going to be that material to go back and require retrospective application to the first period presented. There was no discussion about the fact that you will end up having changed your cost basis, so your depreciation and depletion numbers would also have to be adjusted during those periods for anything placed in service.
Good. Buaki, please.
Yes. Just wondering about the opposite case, such that cost exceed a proceed. Then can we simply recognize this as on the P&L?
Sorry, do you want to repeat?
I mean, so we're talking about the case where, proceed exceed cost. What about the opposite case? Then simply goes to P&L again.
Yes, actually, okay. With the amendments, we will require that all proceeds arising from testing activities should be recognized in the P&L. All okay. Proceeds.
So in that case, the cost, where it's higher than the proceeds, will end up with a negative margin.
Right, exactly.
Which is going to be confusing to your users.
That's right.
Then you may need to consider an onerous contract.
But you agree.
That again brings us back to the question, what is cost?
Really?
Well, one could consider the cost to bring that.
Or a question of what's a contract, right? I mean, if you're more kind of in the consumer goods environment where you would have this kind of early product introduction kind of challenges, your contract is a concrete one single order. You turn it around rather quickly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was initially with Sandra that I thought, can that ever be material? And then I wondered if it does, and I thought you guys wouldn't put it on the agenda if there weren't cases. What's the justification to not have depreciation if I use the machine or whatever it is for generating significant revenue in most cases? Yeah? So doesn't that the notion of having significant proceeds contradict a notion of you shouldn't amortize yet. Yeah. So that's why I thought, wouldn't an approach be more appropriate to say you start depreciation the latest when you start to make significant proceeds, or when you see that you start to make significant proceeds? And that, if that is before you have completed testing, yes, then you start depreciation before completed testing. The second question I asked myself, the wording of the exposure draft looks very much on inventories and stuff. Couldn't it be service revenue that I generate from using an item? Like, I have a server, I provide services through the customer through an IT server. So that the focus on there is an asset which ends up in inventory, and that's what the focus currently is of the document. But couldn't the proceeds come for something other than goods, but rather for services? The third question I ask myself, in most cases, if it is stuff that is used and sold to external customers, it will be IFRS 15 to apply. But then we've got to consider that means we've got to think about capitalizing direct cost of fulfilling, which makes it even more complicated if you first have issues with identifying the cost. And the section in the basis you refer to, in a way, of these other things you've got to do anyway, I think it should acknowledge that there's an additional challenge that any costs you say are the cost of the proceeds, you got to check for capitalizing if it is a performance obligation satisfied over time. My third one is just because otherwise they kill me at home. You write that testing whether an asset is functioning properly will be defined as assessing whether the technical and physical performance of the asset is such that the asset is capable of being used in production or supply of goods or services for rental or others or for administrative purposes. In our industry, it's often used in research and development. Mm-hmm. And if I come home and tell our software developers that they are administrative, they will kill me. So I think the items you listed, production, supply of goods or services, rental, and administrative, I don't think it's comprehensive. There are other functions in the company that may use assets and may test them. So that's why at least R&D is one that came to my mind. So I think the cost side will be a challenge. And the moment you are in IFRS 15, you've got to estimate standalone sales prices. Because it may be sold with other things, and estimating the standalone sales price, if you think about, I've got a different cost structure than post-testing, that should that impact the standalone sales price if you come from a cost-plus margin perspective? So I think the exposure draft could acknowledge a little bit more the complexities that come into play, in particular if the proceeds would fall under IFRS 15.
And just if I may, on a couple of your points which you mentioned at the beginning, and Vance can jump in whenever. So on the depreciation point that you mentioned on why we're saying that there should be no depreciation charge in that period, the idea behind it is that because your asset is not ready for use yet, the idea is that you're not really consuming the asset because it hasn't started its productive, it hasn't started being used for its productive capacity as yet. So any charge of the asset would really be negligible. And if an entity thinks that there is really a charge, if there is really a significant piece of the asset that is being used, then I think they should really go back and revisit whether the asset is really ready for use or not. But if we are saying it's not ready for use, then the idea is that its productive capacity is not being consumed. And that's why I think the idea is that you will not charge depreciation during that period. So I'm not sure if that helps. And in terms of your comment about it could be services, it could be inventory, yes. I think our starting point is very much what IFRS 16 already says today about cost of testing less proceed generated from the item produced during that space. So we kind of stuck to that wording, or we tried to remove that wording, and in our basic discuss why we've removed that wording. But I agree with you. I mean, the amendment won't actually say that these items must be treated as inventory. It just says that you recognize the proceeds from selling it in P&L together with the related cost. And to do so, you would look at the relevant standard. So if it's inventory, you would go to IS2. And if it's part of your ordinary course of business, you would go to IFRS 15 and apply the relevant principle. So the amendment won't actually necessarily direct you to IS2. If it's services, you go to the relevant standard. But I mean, as we consider the feedback, we'll definitely take into account the discussion that we have or in the basis to acknowledge some of the concerns that you've raised.
I just want to express my support to this proposed amendment. I think it's, I do like it. I think it's might be helpful. I just regret that one of the alternatives was not intended to be developed, which is to further discuss when the asset actually is ready for use, as intended by management, in condition and location. I think it's something that still creates a lot of discussion today, and I would really like it to have more guidance in that term. What does it mean?
Yes, as we explained, this is something that the board explored, and the interpretation committee also contemplated at some point during their discussion. But the problem with that approach, there were actually two drawbacks actually by following this way. It would not have, as you know, assessing when an asset is ready for use. We know this is a major issue, but it would have defining that would maybe have helped entities to exert the judgment, but it would not have removed the need to make a judgment. And the other problem that we face is because this is something on which the committee discussed for a very long time, and then they could not reach a consensus on that definition, is that they became aware of the fact that it would have many potential unintended consequences on other standards, and at the end of the day it would have resulted in starting a very wide project with a quite uncertain outcome. And this way, and the board chose that way because it was in terms of balance between the need to be helpful on the short or on the midterm with entities, and also from a cost benefit perspective approach, the solution that was chosen by the board was the most efficient. But we acknowledge that there is a major question, but we also think that the definition for testing activities could be helpful in making that assessment of when an asset is ready for use, because in many cases the end of the testing phases could be a good proxy. We don't say that it should be systemically be a proxy, but it could be in some cases be a good proxy for assessing when the asset is ready for use. And in that way, the amendments are quite helpful.
Mm-hmm. Richard? The definition of testing whether the technical physical performance of the asset, such the asset is capable of being used in the production or supply of goods or services. I think it would be useful to try and link that to something like normal capacity. There's a definition of normal capacity, I think it's in IAS 2. Because you may have, you need a certain amount of throughput to be effective. And this could imply, a very minimal level of throughput would still be capable of being used in production. I think you need to have some measure there.
On that point, I think there was some discussion at the board and the committee, and if it comes up in comment letters, it'll again be revisited probably. But I think initially the board discussion was about, can it be used to produce assets as management intends it, not to achieve the desired level of operating margin, for example. Like, they were afraid, like, if we say a certain like normal operating capacity, that could be taken to mean like, and like you could continue saying that the asset is not available for use until it hits a certain operating margin or stuff. So I think there's a little bit of danger in going down that route, and the board was conscious of that when they discussed this issue. But again, like I said, we'll just consider the feedback and take it forward from there.
But then, okay, then I missed the point, because if it's any level of production, I don't see the issue then. Because any item that's produced for sale is not in the testing.
Like, the idea is it ready for producing items as management intends to produce those items, and not necessarily is it actually being used to produce that level of output. Is it capable of producing that level of output? Is it in the location and condition necessary for producing the output the amendment intends? Not necessarily are they actually producing it at that level?
Okay. So
there's a slight distinction, but I do see your point in there. So.
So you could still link it to being, if the line, say, is capable of being produced at a throughput level rather than it actually being used at a throughput level. Yeah. That's fine. Sandra.
All right. This comment relates both to this section and the agenda, but given where we are currently in implementing numerous accounting standards, I think the board needs to be very careful about introducing any incremental changes, and the benefit has to exceed a higher threshold than you would at other times. I'm not sure if this one meets that threshold. I think it's something that should be discussed. There should be a robust cost-benefit analysis and more thought being given to the cost of actually developing the cost of sales that go along with this.
Srina?
Yes. I come from shipping and logistics industry. Our business is focused more on stevedoring or moving of container boxes from the ship to the land. So the major equipment used is cranes. So the crane performance is measured in terms of number of moves per hour. And it so happens that even though there are some specification as to what is expected of that crane in terms of number of moves of boxes per hour, it may not ever achieve the management's intention. So that object, that target level, it may never be met. So having said that, I can see that even though the impact is not material in my industry, but it may result in unintended consequences. For example, when you start recognizing revenue, service revenue, stevedoring service revenue for moving of boxes during testing phase, it is possible that you will not charge depreciation until you reach that level of productivity which management intends. So I know that it is judgmental here, but it is possible that this can be misused. So there should be some way of monitoring that.
Steve?
I see this isn't something that impacts the business that I work for. So my thoughts are kind of fairly theoretical, and I haven't read through the proposals in much detail. But from a business point of view, it strikes me as being odd that the trigger will just be any revenue from these testing items. Because I can see a scenario where actually you're effectively, if you're recognising the revenue, it would be a massive loss because the costs associated are much, much higher. You join testing, you don't spend. So are we saying that, okay, if the business does not sell those items, then it is potentially capitalized into PPE. But if they choose to sell on a broadly scrap basis, just to recover some of the proceeds, then suddenly that changes the treatment and hits their margins. Now, it strikes me that there could then be a business decision made not to sell, which wouldn't be in the best interests of the stakeholders, but would not mess up the margin.
Interesting.
So I don't know whether that's covered, but that strikes me as a potential risk.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think this proposed amendments will influence lots for some kind of entities like petrochemical and also some kind of high-tech company. So if you're doing this, they will influence a lot for the high-tech company for their investment. So also as I found yes, there's a lot of changes because when we operate in Kazakhstan, there's some kind of regulation from the government. They need to issue the certificate to allow you to implement your plant to be operated. But sometimes this costs a lot, a very long time. During these times, you know, although it's already we can produce our products, but if we do not issue the certificate, it means I cannot make the you know, depreciation. So as this lesson, but gentlemen said, it's hard to you know, match their the revenue with the cost. They have to make decision. So we think so we better keep their original you know, wordings and not to do you know, amendments, because every industry, every entity, they have their own you know, special sectors. So I think the engineers or the management, they can make their decision just like we are doing now. So that's my point of view.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I have two questions. One is Stefan and one is Selina. First, Stefan. Yeah, you said some kind of onerous sales contract. That contract is happening because of this amendment. So I'm saying before this amendment, such kind of onerous contract was not happened. It did not happen.
I said I was speaking from theoretical perspective rather than practical, but I can just see if at the moment you've got a business that would be allocating those proceeds against PPE to offset the cost, because it's not profitable, then I could see a situation where if there were no proceeds, which seems to be the trigger for this, then they'd still be able to allocate the cost to PPE. And as soon as that switch is turned, then, and it may be an immaterial amount because the proceeds themselves may be immaterial, but the cost may be material.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought through whether there was an owner's contract that would exist because you are selling on a scrap basis or similar, those items. I guess there is a risk, but it seems to me that just by flicking that switch that there could be an unintended business consequence to the detriment of the shareholders.
Okay. Yeah, just one point on that. Now, the amendments are not saying that cost of testing must flow through the P&L. It's saying cost of testing the PP&E would still be a directly attributable cost of the PP&E, and those would still be capitalized to PP&E. It's only in the case where you have where you produce some goods, let's say inventory that you're selling, it's any cost of producing that inventory that would be stripped out, not necessarily all the cost of testing.
I understand, but
yeah, I do see your point.
But the cost of producing that may be because you're drawing testing,
correct.
It may be at a significant
correct.
Cost.
Yeah.
And all you're doing is just trying to get a little bit back from that.
Yeah, related to that question, you know, there are many people are suggesting that, you know, difficulty to make some kind of costing of this inventory or some item. So if you know, add some direct labor, direct material or material, you know, on this item, with that cost maybe exceed the sales price of this some sample. So that's a kind of a maybe case. Of that the honest contract can happen. Before this amendment, we shouldn't have to make such costing of this item, because we just put everything on the deduction of cost. So that's another risk of this amendment. Another thing is, Srina, you said there are kind of earnings management risk. That was raised by one of our board members. His name is Weiko, he's a Chinese member. He suggested earnings management risk, so that's why he opposed this amendment. So in the case of prepared perspective, you need some kind of protection that was not necessary in this before the amendment. But after this amendment, you have to justify when you start the depreciation of the some kind of PP&E. So the what that board member says, after this amendment, managers has a kind of a more flexibility.
Correct.
To manage that point of depreciation.
Yeah.
So in a preparer's perspective view, auditors will challenge it, your assessment of the point
mm-hmm.
of the depreciation starting. So you said you suggested you we might need additional monitoring system or mechanism on this issue.
Correct.
Do you have anything?
In fact, currently the what practice we are following as a preparer is as soon as the equipment is ready, whether it is productive as expected or not, we charge the depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
But this amendment would give us an idea whether we can look at the productivity target, to achieve the productivity target first, and then see whether we can defer the depreciation from that effective date. So this would give some flexibility, which may result in unintended consequences. That's what, there is a risk I wanted to highlight from this amendment.
I have one point to add here. You know, there is a difference between the plant being capable of producing what is intended and this wording that capable of operating in the manner intended by the management. There is a difference between the two, capable of producing full capacity and the management in manner intended by the management is different thing.
Because it may never...
It
may never function as management intended, an equipment. Do you agree? It may never. That may be the target set. So I am glad that you have introduced that we should ignore the financial performance. So somewhere we need to bring that... strictness in terms of operational performance also. It should not be taken for granted.
Point I'd like to make is that, is that people from a manufacturing industry or for that matter, in any, he was referring to the IT industry also. Any plant or any instrument, when it is installed, there is something known as, it has been installed and completion of the plant. The moment it is completed does not mean that it will be producing to the fullest capacity. It may take 1 year or maybe more than 1 year to come to the fullest capacity. And then particularly if you go ahead and add this word of intended by the management, you are moving into another trap.
When Stephen said that the procedure is a trigger, there was one more thing I thought of. It may happen that you produce items, but you have not sold them yet.
Yeah.
Before you start to say, now I'm ready to start appreciation. Now you may produce them and say, let's see, maybe I find someone who wants them, maybe I don't. Now, but at the time when I start appreciation, that's when I need to decide, do I include the cost into cost of PPE or into cost in inventory? Now the question is, should I, in this scenario, make an estimate whether I think there will be proceeds, because then it wouldn't be the proceeds that are the trigger, but the expectation of proceeds, or would I start saying, well, I haven't made any proceeds yet, push them into PPE and later take them out again. So I think that is something that may not be that clear based on the guidance here, because somehow the ED appears to assume that before the time of starting depreciation that I know whether I have proceeds or not, that I have already got my proceeds, yeah? But I don't know whether that's necessarily the case. Yeah? And that is getting really complicated if I got to estimate whether I make proceeds or not.
Can I ask a question to Steve and Chris as well? So do you think this amendment may change the behavior of manufacturer? For example, your case, if there is a product during the test period, if you sell it, then you have to recognize revenue as well as cost, so it could be onerous. Then you may suffer the minus margin, and thus you need to suffer loss. But as Chris pointed out, if you didn't sell or just throw it away, maybe you don't have to recognize revenue, so therefore you don't have to recognize cost of sales. So then manufacturer might choose such a way, so that could change the behavior of the manufacturers. So do you think?
I think there must be a risk. If I was a general manager of a business faced with this choice, and it was going to undermine my result for the year, then yes, I think that I would.
Just imagine you're steering your business on an EBITDA basis. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking, well, if I don't have proceeds, then the costs go into the PPE cost, will later come back as depreciation out of amortization and be excluded, so don't negatively affect my steering metric, my KPI. While if I sell them, then the costs are costs that are considered an EBITDA. Mm-hmm. So I could well imagine that this makes a difference, because somehow people sometimes blindly follow everything that helped them with the KPI they are measured on.
Mm. Well, conversely, if you're in a bad year, they might think, great, you know, let's make it even worse. And then we'll recoup the benefits in future. They're the realities, aren't they?
So I'm in the food industry. If you do testing, if the product meets all the quality tests, you sell it as for consumption. If it doesn't meet all the quality tests, you have, there's two levels. You might be able to sell it as cattle feed, or you could, or if it doesn't meet even that quality test, you would scrap it, just destroy it. So I think there is a danger here that if selling the cattle feed, like scrapping, would trigger this treatment, that we instead might not sell as cattle feed and instead destroy it or put it in a landfill. So I think it could change behavior.
Question which Christoph and he brought up, I think it has been answered in BC 9, which says that in applying the proposed amendments, an entity might need to assess whether the particular cost incurred or cost of inventory is applying IAS 2, cost of testing applying IAS 16. Now what does it mean? That during the testing period, if I produce something and I don't sell, you just don't say you don't sell it. If you don't sell it, then IAS 2 will apply. You have to value it at cost or market price, whichever is lower. Eventually, when you sell, eventually, it's all the same. So you are, by holding it, by not selling it, you are not gaining anything. So therefore, this has already been addressed in this BC. BC 9.
But I read BC 9 to come into play once I have decided that it is inventory, that the cost should be separated from the PPE cost. Then once I've done that and I've got to split the cost, that's how I understand BC 9, not in a way of helping me to identify whether there will be proceeds.
No, and I think this discussion has served as a good basis to highlight this issue. And if we do go ahead with proposing some amendments along, with finalizing amendments along this line, that is an area that we definitely have to look at more closely and just make sure we're clear in whichever direction we go. And so that feedback is very helpful in that respect, so thank you for that.
Yeah, right. Another suggestion I have is that what Christoph said was right. The language does not really indicate that you are not only talking about manufacturing industry. So that point also, you may consider bringing in some language on that.
The same point I wanted to highlight here.
I'll just confirm in my area for our workforce that, just backing up what Stephen says, during a testing run, especially in chemical manufacturing, a large part of your cost is the setup cost of getting the production throughput for what you're doing over a smaller volume. Obviously, when you're out of testing run over a large volume, you can spread that cost and become profitable. So it's very common to, through testing run, to get an output that is saleable, you will sell that at a loss. So I think at the manager level, on certain margins, depending on category level, they're very much in business, very, very incentivized at the manager level. I'm sure that would drive behavior to not sell something, to otherwise absorb the loss rather than capitalizing into sort of getting the plant ready to use as what's been done in the case. But saying that from a global perspective, it's from us, this would not be material at all. It's not a concern from a whole group perspective, but definitely would drive some funny behaviours down at the lower managers in a specific plant. No doubt.
So are there any questions?
Thank you. We did have a question for, but I think that just asked whether you agree with the amendments and whether you think the cost of making the amendments are justified in light of the benefits. So some of those have already been answered around the table, but if anyone else has any comments to add on that question.
This is the fourth question. Yeah, on the agenda paper, do you agree overall with the amendments?
Good question. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So let's have a lunch break until 20 past 1. Thank you.